the India Tire Program. India Super Tires, the tires with the red ring, take you across our vast continent as we discover that Africa is adventure. The India Tire Company, makers of India Super Car Tires, India Super Truck Tires, and India Super Tractor Tires, takes pleasure in presenting another exciting adventure from the African continent. Africa is adventure. And here is your storyteller and producer, Monty Doyle.
Good evening. The morning was crisp, cool, and clear. We stood on an open plain outside the Natal village of Heimville. The Blue Mountains were a long way off, and yet their presence seemed to extend to where we stood. David Alexander buttoned his duffel coat and followed my gaze. There was a feather of a cloud brushing the topmost peak of the Drakensberg. We're going to find snow up there, he said. Before we set out on this journey to the roof of Southern Africa, he made a recording for us.
Good evening. This is David Alexander. When I first conceived the idea of the Mokgotlong Mountain Transport in 1946, when first riding on horseback through the Sarni Pass with Mary, I was immediately struck by the breathtaking beauty and the picturesque animal pack trains. But what struck me most of all was that here, on this rough bridle path to the roof of Southern Africa, was an enormous transport potential, because thousands of pack animals use this route, the only one between Natal and Basutoland. How I realized this dream, and how the pass has today become one of Southern Africa's greatest attractions, and how it has assisted in the development of Basutoland, is the story Monty will tell you in this evening's production.
This is the voice of a man who has conquered a mountain and opened up a country. But all this I was to learn later. I kept remembering his words. We're going to find snow up there. The feather of cloud looked as delicate as a duster. This was to be my own personal adventure. Snow on the berg.
Butler!
Crag and Kranz
and Copy
repeated the echo.
Butler!
Silver fern, sun-soaked flower,
and shivering grass carried the cry, swooping down the valley.
Butler!
They come.
Butler!
The white man comes. Mantled in his red blanket, the caller stood on the summit and gave his cry to that fleet-footed messenger of the mountains, the wind. Others would take up the cry. It would echo through the fortress.
And the mountains of the dragon are a fortress. A fortress of crannies and crags surrounding 11,000 square miles of countryside. The bastions, 10,000 feet high. There is only one drawbridge leading into this secret land of the Basutu, the Sarni Pass. Butler! The voice belongs to the Basutu, but the echo belongs to the mountain. Stand on that open plain and you will feel it. The mountain broods, looks on, watches and waits. The mountain is a living thing. For many centuries it has watched and waited. This fortress with a voice. Thunder and hail, the noise of its cannon. Yes, I am the echo of the man. The Basutu are my children. Ever since the day when they became a nation under Moshesh,
when the scattered remnants of Zulu and Matabele gathered in the sheltering walls of my fortress. Here they hid from the white man and the bushmen and the raiders.
My brothers, we are protected by the white men at the Cape. But still the little devils raid our cattle, steal our horses, plunder our fields and kidnap our women. The land of the Basutu will never be safe from the Hottentot and the Bushman until we seal the passes.
And so they made their own Shangri-La. From the Cape and Orange Free State, one may enter, but the way is long and the paths are few. From Natal, there was only one pass, the Sani Pass. Year after year, the Basutu used this pass. Their sure-footed ponies trotted out from the hidden land to the white man's country of Natal. But this twisting, winding path remained secret. 112 years ago, I watched as Dick King, seeking a short route for the pack animals of the Fortrekkers, stumbled through my ravines. But he found nothing. Only the mountain. Only the wind. Only the feather that dusted the peak. 70 years ago, I watched a surveyor and a geologist panting across my frozen riverbeds, but they found nothing. What was the key to the portal? Where was the gate to the fortress? The solution was easy.
What's the matter, David?
Nothing. Just thinking.
Must be a very deep thought, darling.
Just an idea I've had for a long time. The thing is, Mary, well, the war's over as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of. They do say you were the youngest soldier ever to be wounded.
Some comfort. But the war is over, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as every other recruit is concerned. It's 1946. Mary, I'd like you to come out to Hyamville with me next weekend. There's something I want to show you. Right at the moment, it's still a dream, but... Well, we'll see. Even dreams have to be shared.
Two young people came. They came riding up the path my children had used. Then they dismounted and watched the pack trains climbing to the clouds. The man was thoughtful. He watched and then stretched out his hand and turned the key that opened the gate.
Don't you see, Mary? Every year, thousands of Basutu ponies come down that Sani Pass. If they can do it, so can I. If they can do it with a pony, then I can do it with a truck.
But David, the path is too narrow.
I've got news for you. It's already been done by a government surveyor. He took a car up to the top of the Sani Pass. If I can do the same and establish a transport system from Hyamville to Mahotlong, I'll be able to do the trip in a fraction of the time. Think of it, Mary. A mechanized pack train. Over £1 million of wool is brought down the Sani Pass every year. Basutu land needs manufactured materials. I can take the raw materials out and bring vegetables, machinery, and all the other things that the natives in Basutu land lack up over the mountains and into the country.
Well, darling, it's a wonderful idea, but do you realize what it's going to mean? Do you realize what it'll mean driving a truck up that narrow pass every day?
Tires will last you
1 month.
A differential will last
3 months.
The ponies of my people are sure-footed, and the path is narrow. When the rains come, that path becomes a slippery, skidding, sliding way to eternity.
David! David, you're getting to the edge! David, reverse!
Oh, David, darling, you're 6 inches from the edge.
Quite a drop, isn't it? 2,000 feet. I'll get it right, I tell you. It's just a case of knowing when to reverse. Now, you see, if I take her down in reverse and then release my clutch at the last moment, the wheels will grip.
The man and the woman tried.
They sweated through summer and froze during winter. But they never gave up. The mountain called, a country called. Experience broadened the path. Slowly, David Alexander's hands, flashing from gear lever to wheel, cajoled and pulled his truck up and around the twisting bridle path to the heights. Up to where the feather duster brushed the summit. Up, up, up. 1,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000 feet.
Two young people came. They found the key. They opened the window to a sight no other white man had seen. And later, many others would come. And reaching that same stage, they would look and wonder and glory at the path up which they had come. And then, taking my spirit, taking my echo, tell the world of what they had seen.
Time now, exactly 12:30 p.m., and the start of the trip up the pass was at 10:30 a.m. 2 hours ago. In that time, we've covered 9 miles, and we're now at a height of 7,000 feet. Ahead of me, above this muddy little trail with the thorn bushes on either side of it and the steep little mountain streams running down across the track that we're following, ahead is the escarpment, 9,200 feet. And that is the height of the Sunny Pass, which we shall shortly be crossing. To the left, Hodgson's Peaks, 10,688 feet. That's 2.25 miles to go for those 2,200 feet. It gives you an almost exact ratio of 1,000 feet a mile. In other words, an approximate rise of 1 in 5. Sleet storms are coming down now, whipping down with quite a chill wind off the top of the mountains, off the top of the escarpment. To the left, they're snow-capped. Hodgson's Peaks are snow-capped. And way round, in a great toothy, bitter line of crags, stand out other white-capped peaks also. We're going to follow the river up here, and we shall reach its very source, where, under the watery sun that's breaking through the ragged clouds that are blowing overhead, we shall find the frozen waterfall, which is the very source of the river, up whose valley we shall flow.
7,000 feet up, 4 miles per hour, 1 gallon of petrol to do 2 miles. But the summit's a long way off. 10,500 feet up the Black Mountains, and there's a feather duster brushing the summit. Men had died up there.
One of my peaks is called Hodgson. He was a farmer. He went seeking the bushman who stole his stock. The weapon he carried misfired and wounded him. He died in my cold arms.
The mountain waited and watched. It watched this puny man cling to the bridle path and forge upwards, upwards to the windswept plain. A Busuttu pony can navigate a 9-foot-wide path with the ease of a cat walking a wall. But a truck is not a pony.
There's the police post. After that comes the steepest part. You know, some of the gradients here are 1 in 2.5. Imagine, for every 2.5 feet forward, you rise 1 foot. And yet, Mary, I believe that one day this path will be South Africa's greatest tourist attraction. It'll be safe then. We'll make it safe. Basutoland will widen this bridle path, and the rest of the world will be able to see what we're seeing today. Look at it, Mary. Have you ever seen a view like that?
The path falls like a white ribbon dropped by mistake. It winds and wiggles, it turns and twists, down and down. It hesitates on tiptoe on the edge of a 6,000-foot sheer drop, then shudders back to the safety of a boulder-strewn cliff.
But those who must climb look upwards, not to the plain below. Upwards to Tabotsanyana, a golden hill caught in the setting sun, 10,500 feet up. The highest peak in South Africa, Tabotsanyana, pretty little peak, my children call it.
And there is the plain to be reached at the top of the Sani Pass.
Here, the waterfall of the Sarny River plunges over into the ravine. But the icy breath of winter has caught it, frozen solid. Here, one can indeed turn back at last and look down at the heights one has climbed. Here, those who today have reached this height in the comfort of the vehicles of David Alexander once again acquire the echo of the Mountain of the Dragon. 9,200 feet closer to the sun and the white duster.
Don't expect anything like clever comment now. This is the most fantastic journey I have ever made in my life. I've been all around the world. I've been to the Great Wall of China. I've been across all the oceans of the sea. And never have I experienced anything possibly to approach the climb up this mountain. We're at 9,200 feet now. We're parked at the top of this tremendous pass. The two four-wheel drive vehicles that have brought us up, and below me, shrouded in a beautiful rainbow as the terrific storms of sleet and rain that have swept us up this pass, as they fade away into the distance, we can see range upon range upon range, fold upon fold of hills and mountains leading right out into Nepal, a vast, tremendous expanse of this Dragon's Tooth range, the Drakensberg, this most powerful range of Africa, as we ourselves climb up onto the very roof of southern Africa, having come up countless innumerable hairpin bends, on many of them reversing two or three times, chains on the back wheels of these two vehicles of ours, and now sheltering to make this recording under a Basutu blanket to keep the cold whistling wind that's hurtling down out of the heavens out of this microphone so that you can hear the few words that I have to say to you.
Now the open plain lies before us, cold, bleak, and bare. The rain has changed to sleet, the sleet to hail, the hail to snow, and so to ice. There is snow on the berg. You are listening to Africa is Adventure, brought to you by the India Tire Company, makers of India Super Red Ring Foam Rubber Mattresses and India Super Red Ring Foam Rubber Pillows. And now we continue with this evening's adventure, Snow on the Berg.
Butler!
The pass was conquered. The white man had come. In 1946, David Alexander successfully journeyed over the Drakensberg Mountains and reached the Basutoland base of Mokgotlong. The distance was only 45 miles, but it took him something like 8 hours. But it took the pack trains almost 2 days. So was Mokgotlong Mountain Transport formed. Day after day, he made the trip on his own, until other adventurous souls joined him. Men like John Wells and Arthur Major. One a former wheat farmer, the other a shell diver. But men who had the patience to drive 10 miles in an hour and a half. And men who never grew tired of that open plain at the top of the pass. This is the top of the South African world. A slice of the Gobi Desert transported to the southern hemisphere. The wind whistles across the plain. There are no trees here, only frozen pools dotted in the weather-beaten rock. Mirrors dropped by a nature reluctant to see her reflection. The Basutu men, wrapped to the brow in their red blankets, lean into the wind and plod patiently behind the ponies and mules. Occasionally, they glance curiously upwards at the mechanized invader of their traditional terrain.
They've improved the track across here a great deal since the old days. Although, basically, it's still the same trail. We've just broadened it. By the way, in a few moments, we'll come to the Orange River. That's right, the Orange River. It's probably the only place in South Africa where you can ford it on foot. It's only a trickle up here if it's not frozen. I've often skated on it. Yes, the cold governs everything up here. That's one of the Suitland's greatest problems, the lack of fuel. There are no trees. Coal costs about 27 shillings a bag, and paraffin a pound a tin. But I think we've made a great difference to the standard of living.
The white man brought materials to build a hospital. The white man brought maize and kaffir corn for my children. Before his coming, 26,000 pack animals went up and down the winding pass. 300 men battled through the winds and the snow.
Hotso! Hotso!
Hotso! Yes, so my children gave the traditional salute as they step aside to allow the white man to pass. Hotso! Peace. Peace to you who come when we are in need. Yes, there is peace in this mighty fortress. But the mountain can plead no part for white man or Basutu when nature chooses to make her attack. Come and look at my wonders, she says, but adventure is the payment. A payment those who love nature will willingly pay. The white feather dusting the peaks of the Black Mountains has turned to gray. The one truck has been left behind at the top of the pass. The vehicle containing David Alexander, Monty Doyle, and Patrick O'Malley has pushed on across the barren plain. The Black Mountains loom up. Snowflakes whip down from the peak. The snow begins piling up in front of the wheels. Soon the track disappears, but they go on. 9,700 feet. 800. 900. 10,000 feet. They are 500 feet from the summit. Across the ridge lies McCotlong and Warm. But 500 feet may as well be 500 miles. The truck snarls and skids and lumbers through the snow. But eventually, it can go no further. Visibility is down to a few feet.
This is Monty Doyle speaking. The time is now 5:23. And we have reached the amazing stage in the journey to the roof of the Basutoland world. We're surrounded by a world of snow, a world of white. We can't go any further because despite the fact that the truck we're traveling in is equipped with four-wheel drive and with chains, the snow is blocked up to such an extent that we've had to turn back. For the first time, I believe, since the inception of this amazing type of transport over these Drakensberg mountains. Patrick O'Malley sitting next to me, cold, shivering. He's been pushing with me in order to reverse the truck in the narrow tracks.
What we actually did was to back down from a snowdrift about 4 feet deep where there was no hope of getting through, and when we got to a corner, we let the wheels spin a bit in the snow, and as they spun, we pushed one end of the truck and pulled the other, and the truck swung round through 180 degrees inner tracks and faced down the hill again. And now we propose to slide on down the hill at a very slow rate of knots until we reach a police post where we can get out of this blizzard, which is blocking out the complete valley in front of us.
The hours in this white world pass slowly. But eventually, the flakes cease, and the truck slides and slips its way back across the plain and down the pass to firmer ground and the safety of recollections and nervous reminders of a small adventure, gratefully experienced, but not willingly repeated. The adventure of seeking entrance to my fortress is but a small part of the total picture. The paths are safe. It is the men who made the first journeys up and down those paths who really matter. Every day, the trucks make the winding journey up the Sarnie Pass and back again. During the first month of their adventure, the figures in their balance sheet made pathetic reading. Today, it runs into a profitable sum. But facts and figures can never outweigh the grand total. The scenes the tourist sees. The glory of the mountain. Sunset. Twilight invests my walls with a quivering light softer and warmer than the painting done by dawn. My peaks go crimson. Battlements and towers blush in countless reds and pinks, all touched with purple and blue mist exhaled from out of the depths of the sunny past. Some walls are burnished gold. In the pre-evening hush, armies of shadows mass to creep stealthily after retreating day. My massive old formations are transformed. Briefly, they stand in silhouette against the sky. Then darkness walks, black velvet shod, to drape the scene with night again. And heaven's tiny lamps hang glittering over the brooding vastness.
The night is time for reflection. Time for a young pioneer, tired and soaked, to tell his helpmate of the difficulties of the day. The past is always with you, always waiting for another dawn.
What are you looking at?
Across the plain at the mountain.
It's always with you, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it's always with me. Perhaps one day we'll retire and let others carry on the work.
Remember when we first arrived in Heimville, they thought us mad. Now they're no different.
Well, it was a bad scheme. I can't say I blame them.
But it worked.
Yes, it worked. But as I said, one day I'll have to hand over the wheel to someone else. And yet I know I'll never be able to stay away long. I'll always come back. I'll always see the mountain across the plain. I'll always wonder what the next day will be like. Will it be fine, or will there be snow on the berg? I'll be jealous of every sunset I miss. I'll envy every dawn that breaks on the mountain and finds me somewhere else.
Sunrise.
Night star-studded doors roll slowly back in utter quiet. Day peeps tentatively through, as if it feared that night might drop on it again. Slowly, first dawn tints my ancient temples and terraces in soft gold and pink. Then, reassured, day leaps the rugged rim and joyously floods the jagged walls with beauty. Walls she has gilded for countless eons to relieve time's endless carving. Birds wing out of the sunny past shadow at day's coming. Their song falls sweet and clear on my children's ears. Deep in the past, the sunny runs, metallic silver in the early light, then silver flecked with sunrise gold. The past is nature's creation, too. The doorway to my fortress, and now the door stands open wide to welcome yet another day and usher in those who come to stare and wonder. My duty for the coming day is over. Red-mantled, a sentinel on a peak, the doorman gives his cry again.
Butler! Butler!
They come. And in their coming, there is peace and prosperity.
The story is told. But there is no ending. The mountain waits. Perhaps for you.
You have been listening to Snow on the Berg, written and produced for the India Tire and Rubber Company by Monty Doyle. As David Alexander, you heard Stuart Brown, Mary, his wife, Valerie Phillip, the Spirit of the Mountain, Patrick O'Malley, the narrator, Harold Lake, the native, Gabriel Bayman. A film in color has been made of the sunny parts and will be shown throughout South Africa. And now, on behalf of the India Tire Company, this is Patrick O'Malley wishing you safe driving. Don't forget to listen next Sunday evening at 8:30, when India Super Tires, the tires with the red ring, will take you once again across our vast continent as we discover that... Africa is adventure.